Welcome to the Master of None podcast, adventures in a hands-on life. Build, grow, cook, train, explore. As I was thinking about recording this episode, I found myself recalling different events from my life. I'm not talking about major life events, like whether that's graduating from high school or college, or getting married, having kids, whatever other major life events you might think of. I was thinking more of events like a barbecue on a hot summer day and having a glass of cold, sweet tea, or finding myself sitting on rugs in a Bedouin tent, being served tiny cups of steaming hot tea, or staying the night in a Scottish guest house and waking up to find a full traditional Scottish breakfast laid out, including tea, or being entertained for dinner in a Palestinian home and again being served tea. Or after spending most of the day lost in the Irish countryside, trying to find our way from one town to the next, before the days of GPS and all of that, to finally make it to the house we were staying at, to be greeted with fresh baked goods and a hot pot of tea. Now, I'm sure by now you're seeing the common thread of tea and probably thinking, oh boy, is he going to do an entire episode about tea? Not to worry, not exactly. But before we get to our actual project for today, let's talk just a little bit about tea, because tea actually has kind of a fascinating history. Now, when we say tea, in today's terms, we could be talking about any sort of caffeinated tea, black tea, green tea. We could also be talking about herbal teas or spice teas or a whole variety of drinks that are basically made by steeping spices, herbs, or leaves, other than coffee, in, I guess coffee's not really any of those, so we'll go with spices, herbs, leaves of any sort, in hot water. And allowing that to steep, allowing the flavors to come out of those leaves or spices or herbs, and kind of permeate and flavor the water, and then consuming that as a drink. And that could be a hot drink, cold drink, whatever. That's generally what we're talking about. But specifically the tea plant that we would get like just plain black tea or green tea from is actually just one species of plant, Camellia sinensis, which originates from an area kind of stretching from northeastern India to southwest China. Now, tea, like, we don't even know how old the consumption of tea is, and there are all sorts of legends about where it started. Most likely, drinking tea did start somewhere in China, as far as we know. And this was probably at least 4,000 to 5,000 years ago when people in China started drinking tea. And there are all sorts of legends and stories around how it started. I don't remember the details of any of these, but I know one of them has something to do with, for some reason, like there was some sickness going on that they thought was coming from the water. So the emperor issued a law that all of the citizens had to boil water before eating it, before drinking it. It's actually not a bad idea if you think you're getting sick from the water. And while boiling his own water, a gust of wind came up and blew some leaves from a nearby tree into his water, and they flavored the water, and he drank it, and it apparently like healed him of some other illness or something. Like I said, I don't remember all of the details of these stories, but that's something like that. And there are a lot of different variations kind of that same story. Now, we know that from China, the cultivation and consumption of tea spread to kind of the rest of Southeast Asia from there, and then kind of to the rest of Asia, Pacific Islands, Russia, the Middle East, Africa. And it actually, a lot of people think of England when they think of tea. tea actually was not introduced to England until the 1650s, and it did rapidly become very popular in England, and so much so that, of course, everybody knows about English tea or formal tea, like so popularized that it actually became kind of its own meal, I guess. Maybe some of my listeners in the UK can enlighten me as to why tea is not actually a meal, or maybe it is. Give me some details. That'd be interesting. Anyway, tea rapidly became commoditized. We've talked about that term a couple times before, but when you hear about something becoming commoditized, what that means is basically it's something that's usually a bulk good of some sort, like tea, tobacco, oil, anything like that, that is shelf stable, for lack of a better word, shelf stable long enough that it can be bought, sold, and traded, and people can wait for market fluctuations to actually use the buying and selling and trading of that item to make money, like in and of itself. You're not going to commoditize something like avocados because you have a very limited time frame from when they're harvested. Well, you're kind of limited as to when you harvest them, first of all. And then once they're harvested, you have a very, very limited time frame between then and when they have to be sold. You can't wait for market fluctuations to dictate the price and then wait and sell them when the price is high, like you could with something like gold or oil or whiskey or tea. So throughout the rest of the 1600s and into the 1700s, tea would have actually been a very common cargo item. In fact, there's a whole class of ships referred to as tea clippers because they were basically built to carry tea. And along with coffee, tobacco, indigo, spices, and any other items that were kind of commoditized and shipped globally. Now, the United States has what we might call an uneasy relationship with tea. Now, at some point in the, we'll call it the 1770s, between 1770 and 1773, it really became considered in America, in the American colonies, to be unpatriotic to drink tea. And anybody who grew up in the United States, who's taken American history, of course, gets the very short version of the story of, oh, the British were taxing tea and other things, so the Americans were upset. Yeah, sort of. It's way more complicated than that, and is actually a fairly fascinating study of micro and macroeconomics and the East India Company and the Bank of England and the British government and other lenders and bailouts, company bailouts and boycotts in the colonies and commodity monopolization and price fixing and Dutch tea versus English tea. Read into that Dutch versus British colonization and many other factors. It can actually be a fairly fascinating study. But suffice to say for now that at some point it became considered unpatriotic to drink tea, and the Americans started drinking coffee instead, which is part of the reason why coffee is actually still so popular in the United States. Now, from the 1990s until now, the specialty tea market in the United States has actually just kind of exploded. And regular tea is still actually not that popular in the United States, by and large. I like it. But anyway, when I say specialty tea, I'm talking about tea blends and spice teas and herbal teas and all sorts of stuff. And tea is growing in popularity in the United States. Now, there are many ways of making tea. Now, the simplest is, and most of the methods are going to involve some combination of boiling water and dropping tea leaves into that boiling water, allowing them to soak in the hot water so that the color and flavor and other compounds leach out of the tea leaves into the water. You may also hear about like sun tea, which is almost like a cold brew method. You don't actually boil the water. You put the water in a glass jar, put the tea in there, and leave it sitting in the sun. and that takes a lot longer. There are also different pour-over tea methods, especially with some different Japanese teas, where the boiling water is poured directly over the tea leaves or whatever other herbs, spices, flowers, especially with like a rosebud tea. That's typically how it's made, I believe, is just by having the rosebuds in some sort of filter and pouring the hot water over them. And it just kind of gets that one pass. And a lot of people think that, I'm not saying they're wrong, but people who are more connoisseurs than I am of this sort of thing often believe that that single pass of the hot water over the tea, the rosebuds, coffee for that matter, gives it a cleaner, like more pure flavor or something. I guess, I don't know. I'm not the expert on that. There are also what are often referred to as chai teas, which is kind of redundant because chai is just a word for tea. But usually if you hear about a chai tea, somebody's talking about mixing tea with milk and honey, and often like a spiced tea with milk and honey, to make a little different version of the tea drink. Now that's all you get for your general lesson on tea. Today we are going to be making tea, but we're doing it in a very specific way. We are using something called a samovar. And not only is the samovar really cool, but it's also fun to say. Samovar. All right, so what is a samovar? Now, this is something that, believe it or not, you have probably seen before, and when I describe it, hopefully you'll know what I'm talking about, and if not, next time you see one, you'll be like, ah, that's what he was talking about. So, this is a teapot, sorta. We should back up, maybe. I don't know. So, we actually got ours very recently, and admittedly, when I saw it, I referred to it as a Turkish teapot. Turns out, even though these are used in Turkey, they're not really Turkish. They're actually Russian, sort of. So let me describe the samovar. Now, these are often, usually, made of brass-plated tin. So they're going to have like a brassy color to them. Now, not always. You may also see them that are actually made out of silver, or copper, or porcelain, for that matter, all sorts of different stuff. Most of them that I've seen, I'm going to say a solid 99% of them that I've seen, are this brass-plated tin. And it looks like some sort of urn. Imagine like a brass urn with legs, short legs usually, and a tap on the side, like a little spigot on the side, and a teapot kind of perched on top. So now that you kind of have an idea of what the thing looks like, let's talk about why I said it was sort of Russian. So the history of the modern, quote, modern samovar only goes back to about 1778, which is the first recorded instance that we have of one of these being made in a metal shop and sold as a, quote, samovar. So really not that old. We're talking like less than 250 years old, but through writing and archaeology and old pictures that we find on pottery and stuff, we know that there are similar things, similar devices that go back a lot further. So we think that the samovar was influenced by Byzantine and Asian culture. And that may have been where they kind of got this idea. On the other hand, we know that Russian culture also influenced both Asian and Byzantine cultures. So it's kind of hard to say which way that went, which is kind of one of the interesting things about trying to track something back through history and where it came from, is all of these cultures, like there's never like a direct path. All of these cultures are so intertwined that it's like, oh, you know, we see the same thing show up here and here and here. So obviously this culture got it from this other culture. And then we're like, oh, wait, maybe that's the opposite. And these other people actually got it from these people, unlike we thought, whatever. we can actually trace something like a samovar all the way back to Greek times, like pre-Roman Empire Greek times, with something called an autepsa. And these were also used by the Romans, who also called them an autepsa, keeping in mind that even during the height of the Roman Empire, we still have a lot of Greek language influence. So autepsa, meaning auto as in self, tepsa, like as in tepid, think warming, autepsa meaning self-warming. And the autepsa, as far as we know, was basically a brass urn type vessel that would be used to heat water, and it had an internal tube that you would drop hot coals into, and you'd have like kind of a smoldering fire going on inside inside this urn to keep the water warm. Now, whether or not those had a tap, whether or not they were used to make some sort of tea, we don't really know, but something like a samovar can trace its roots all the way back to at least Greek times, maybe even further. And you might also think, like, well, how would something get from the Greeks to the Russians? That's kind of a distant connection. Until you think about, like, Turkey and Greece historically being very closely connected to Turkey, being kind of closely connected to Russia-ish area. So, there you go. Point being, we don't really know the historical roots of this thing until they pop up being called a samovar in 1778 in Russia. So anyway, that's some of the history that we do know. Now let's kind of talk about how the thing works, because today we are actually going to make tea with the samovar. Now the first thing to do, just like with a lot of things, was to completely break it down into its parts and give it a good thorough cleaning. It was pretty dusty when we got it, and we actually got it kind of circuitously through a relative of a friend who had passed away. So that's how we ended up with it. Anyway, let's take a look at it. I actually have it sitting here, and we're going to do a combination of some research to figure out how I'm supposed to use the thing, and maybe a little reverse engineering, and I'm sure we can figure out the right way to use it. So it's sitting right here. First thing is it has this teapot sitting on top. Let me pull that off. Okay. Now, the teapot, pretty much your basic teapot. Again, this whole thing is brass. So as you're visualizing this, picture just a standard shaped teapot made out of brass. Fairly small, though. I'm going to estimate it might hold, oh, maybe a cup and a half to 2 cups of water tops. So, little lid, teapot-shaped teapot, here's my handle, here's my spout, and so on. You get the idea. Let's set that down. That part's pretty basic. Okay, the next part, it kind of has this little ring-shaped thing that holds the teapot that it was resting in, which appears to come off. Yep. That comes off, and it fits over an internal tube. So, like I said, we have basically this brass urn, and now we have this internal tube in the brass urn. And, yeah, this part, I guess, just kind of holds the teapot in place. It's like a little saucer kind of thing for the teapot, and it fits around that internal pipe. Let's set that down. Okay. The next piece, working our way down, is a lid with two handles and a circular hole through the middle. That internal pipe comes up through this hole, and it also has a small hole in it that I'm going to go ahead and guess is to release steam so that we'll be able to see when the water is boiling. Let's set this aside. Okay. The remaining part has a few moving parts, but it's basically one piece. It's the actual urn itself. And we have the outer urn. That's going to create the water chamber. I've already done a little bit of research, and now looking at it, this is making a lot more sense how this works. So we have this outer chamber of the urn. We're going to fill that up with water. This inner pipe is basically going to act as a fire chamber and chimney. That's where the fire is going to go. So we're going to build a fire in there. And that's actually open to the bottom, but kind of screened off. There's kind of a grate in the bottom of that. So I suspect as we drop hot coals into there, as they burn down, the ash will be able to fall out to the bottom. Let's flip it over and take a look. Oh, cool. Okay. So on the bottom, there's actually a little hinged door that we can, yep, close and kind of latch closed. Convenient. There we go. Or we can twist it and open it back up. So that's where the ash is going to fall into, and then we can clean it out through there. We also have a spigot coming out. It's connected to the water chamber part and has a little handle on it. Very simple spigot handle. Oh, it came out. Okay. Okay. That'll make it easier to actually get fully clean. Yep. Just has a hole right through it. So when it's turned at 90 degrees, should theoretically stop the flow of water. Or if we turn it to be parallel with the spigot, boop, like that, should allow water to flow through. Fairly simple. Two handles, one on each side. So presumably that would be to carry it if we need to move it after it's hot. I suspect we could, I'm trying to think why we'd need to move it. I guess if we're having our fire outside to get it heated up, and then we wanted to bring it inside to actually have tea, that would work. So there we go. Let me set this down. And it seems to be like barely, if ever, used. So who knows? Unfortunately, I was never able to actually speak to the original owner. So I don't really have any way of knowing any of the history on this particular samovar or where it was purchased or any of that. So what's next? Okay. This piece is basically a simple brass tube, about a 2-inch diameter, with a long handle, a long wood handle coming out of the side. I'm presuming that this is actually the chimney. So what a chimney does, other than giving the smoke a place to go, the chimney, as the air in the chimney heats up, that air is going to rise, and it's actually going to pull fresh air in through the bottom to keep that fire going. So once we get those hot coals in there, we'll put the chimney on there while the water's heating up, and then I guess after the water's boiling, we'll take the chimney off, put the teapot on top, and then the remaining fire will keep the little teapot warm. So, let's set this aside. Okay. Having gone through all of these parts now, the process that I was able to gather from a little bit of research actually makes a lot more sense. So, what we're supposed to do is split some very tiny firewood first. And we're talking like thumb size or smaller, like finger sized pieces of firewood, maybe 6 inches long and about the diameter of your finger. Very small pieces of firewood. We're then going to build a fire with those tiny pieces of firewood. We're going to fill the outer chamber of the samovar with water. And then once those kind of burn down so that the entire surface is charred, we're going to start dropping those pieces into the fire chamber of the samovar. That little fire in there is going to heat the water up, and we're going to take our teapot. We're going to add loose tea to the teapot, and quite a bit, actually, because we want that to be very, very strong tea in the teapot. Now, once the water's boiling, we're going to fill the teapot up with water from that tap on the samovar. Keep that fire going. We're going to set the teapot on top of the samovar to continue heating. So that actually keeps it warm. This is supposedly one of the big, like, strengths of the samovar is it keeps the tea hot throughout the entire time that you're having tea. So it's not like you make tea in a teapot and then you have to put a tea cozy over it to keep it warm. You actually have a little fire keeping everything warm. Okay, so then we have these little teacups. Let me pull one of these out. There we go. Okay, these are actually really cool because they are a brass teacup with a glass insert. So they look really cool being brass, but then you're not actually having to drink out of brass because you can kind of get a little flavor from that sometimes, which is maybe not great. I don't know. So it's actually a glass teacup inside of this brass teacup. They're kind of cool. Anyway, the idea is after the tea has steeped in this little teapot that's been continually heated by that little fire going inside the samovar, we take the teapot off the top and we pour a small amount of tea. From what I can gather, maybe like less than a half an inch of tea in the bottom of the teacup. We then take our teacup, well, we take the teapot and put it back on top so it stays hot. Then we take our teacup and we fill it up with the hot water from the samovar to like top it off and dilute it down to the desired strength, because the tea straight out of the teapot is going to be a lot stronger than you would normally drink tea. So we dilute it down with that hot water. And it's just kind of an interesting way to drink tea. Let me set this down. So that's what I was able to gather from the process, and I'm sure the first run through, we're going to learn a few things. I also did learn that if you're having trouble getting the fire going in the samovar, or if it goes out, or if you need to like kick it up a little with a little more airflow, the traditional way to do that, especially on a larger one, mine's a smaller one, but on a larger one, is to take a Russian jackboot, which is like one of the Russian knee-high boots with kind of the floppy top. Turn it upside down over the chimney and pump the sole of the boot up and down to act as a bellows to get that airflow in there to really kick the fire up. And actually, I remember when President Obama visited Russia and they served him tea from a samovar, that's actually how they started the fire in the samovar, was the traditional way with the boot, pumping the boot up and down as the bellows. So that's kind of fun. Okay, just a couple more things before we actually go out and have our samovar tea today. And we're starting from scratch. We have the samovar here. We're going to split our wood. We're going to go through that whole process that I just talked about. And before we do that, though, maybe some of you know more about this than I do, but along with the samovar came another brass apparatus. I pulled it out right here. Now, this appears to basically be a wide, shallow double boiler of sorts. So it has a lid, just took the lid off, followed by a pan that's maybe 4 inches deep and 10 inches across. And that sits, hang on, let me set this down. Pan with a handle, like I said, maybe 10 inches across and maybe 4 inches deep. Let me set that down. Long handle. That sits down in another pan that's just slightly deeper, so it's not resting on the bottom, with two little handles on it. Presumably, I've seen enough stuff to suspect that this operates as a double boiler. Presumably I'd put some water in this lower pan and then put the upper pan on top of it. Heat up the water and it could keep something hot without actually like burning or scorching the bottom. And then below that, hang on just 1 second, let me set this down. Okay, that actually rests in this circular frame with three legs. And then below that, hang on 1 second, is this little apparatus. That's a little brass, very small pan with a candle inside of it. And presumably I would light the candle that's going to heat up the water and then keep whatever is in that upper pan warm. So some very basic reverse engineering there to figure that out. However, I don't know, like, traditionally, is there something in particular that I should be serving with the tea that would go in this little double boiler server pan thingy? So, if any of you know the answer to that question, please let me know. Let me put this back down. I also got the whole set of teacups, like we talked about, that are the little glass inserts in the brass teacups. So I have a whole set of those, so that'll be fun. One other thing that came with it, and I don't know if the person who owned it even got these in the same place. They all look very similar, but I have no idea. So the other thing that came with the set that she actually had been keeping with the set, so I got all of it, is this thing that looks like some sort of urn with a very large glass insert in it. Like, I think a brass urn, two handles, lid, and a glass insert that's maybe, honestly, like a gallon and a half. Yeah, that's my estimate, is about a gallon and a half. So sizable. Now, I don't know what I'm supposed to use that for. I'm honestly a little afraid that it's actually like a really fancy chamber pot. So I don't want to like, I know I can get it totally clean, so there's no like health issue, but I don't want to serve something to my guests out of something that was actually intended to be a chamber pot, because yeah, it looks a little bit like a spittoon also. It's just huge. Like, nobody needs a gallon and a half spittoon. So I also don't know what that is. So if any of you know what that is, please let me know. All right, I'm going to go ahead and start splitting some tiny firewood. I actually already cut from our log pile with the chainsaw. I already cut some fairly small diameter logs, maybe like 4 to 6 inch diameter logs down to like 6 inch lengths. So I'm starting with some small unsplit logs. We're just going to take a hatchet and split those down to those finger-sized firewood sticks that we're actually going to build the fire with and drop into the samovar. So just want to make sure we went over everything. We kind of took the thing apart, talked about all the pieces, some of the history, how, based on my research, we're supposed to use it. But like I said, I have never actually used one of these myself. So we're going to see how that goes, and I'm sure we'll learn some stuff. Now, I kind of started the episode talking about recalling these different tea experiences from my life. And one other one that I have to mention is, after a long trip, nearly halfway around the world, from the US to Azerbaijan, we finally made it to the airport in the capital city of Baku, made it through customs, convinced them that yes, actually that was where we, as a couple Americans, intended to end up. They were skeptical. And we then took an overnight, after spending a great day. Oh, I should mention, we went there to visit some friends who were serving in the Peace Corps in Azerbaijan. They met us at the airport, which was great. So now it's like, okay, I have some people that kind of know their way around. This is going to make things a lot easier. So we spent an awesome day kind of kicking around the city of Baku. And really cool place. There's like an old, it's right on the shores of the Caspian Sea, and like an old walled city that you can kind of walk around the wall, and cool shops and stuff. Anyway, from there, we took an old train down the coast of the Caspian Sea all the way to the city of Lankaran in southern Azerbaijan. It was awesome. Overnight train. I love like sleeper cars on trains, personally. I think they're great because like you get to relax and sleep, and then you wake up all refreshed. So after a trip halfway around the world, it was great to get some sleep, woke up the next morning totally refreshed, and started exploring the city of Lankaran with our friends, and went to a, I guess, restaurant. Yeah, went to a restaurant, had some awesome Azeri food, and of course, sitting there in the restaurant to serve tea, they have a samovar. So kind of fun, bring it full circle, talking about all these different tea experiences from my life and samovar. Now I have one at home. And in Azerbaijan, let me tell you, they take their tea seriously. Like the Brits have nothing on the Azeris when it comes to having tea. The Brits do it like once or twice a day. The Azeris, yeah, tea is like a constant thing. So the samovar lends itself well to that because you keep that fire going in the samovar and you just constantly add water to it. It's, as it's depleted, keep the fire going. It keeps the water hot, your little teapot hot, and you can have tea all throughout the day. Pretty cool. So we're going to see if we can learn the techniques and mysteries of the samovar so that we can have samovar tea all day if we want to. Let's go ahead and run outside because this is an outside project, being as we're building a fire, and see how this works. All right, I think we're ready to make some tea. So here I have a little fire. It's not lit yet. We're going to light it soon with some of our tiny firewood, and we'll let that burn a little bit and burn down so that those are mostly charcoal by the time we add them to the samovar. I have the samovar sitting here. We have it filled up with water and have the chimney ready to go so that we can get that good draft of air to keep that fire going. I have the teapot here, which will go on later after the water is boiled. And I have tea in the teapot, just loose tea, ready to go. And a teacup. So let's go ahead and light our fire. And I really have no idea how long this is going to take, but we'll see. The fire's lit. You can probably hear it crackling away in the background. So we'll give it a few minutes and let those little pieces of wood just burn down to kind of charcoal sticks. And then we'll start adding them one at a time to the samovar. We'll see how this goes. All right, our fire's been burning for a little while now. So some of these sticks are fully charred on the outside, which I believe is what we're going for. So we're going to go ahead and grab some of those charred sticks with our little metal tongs that I brought out, drop them into the internal fire chamber of the samovar to start heating up the water. So we'll see how this goes. All right. Those are still burning. So let's go ahead and add our chimney to get that good draft going. There we go. Okay. All right, the chimney's attached. It seems to be drafting well. So we're just going to keep an eye on it. We'll keep our little fire going so that we have a constant supply of the little sticks to add. And we'll see how long it takes to boil the water. So the water in the samovar is definitely boiling, which is cool. That actually didn't take that long. Just kind of sat out here, relaxed, kept an eye on it, kept the little fire tended, dropped fresh charcoal sticks into the internal chamber of the samovar as needed, and it heated right up. So that's kind of cool. Like I said, water brought to a boil. So we're going to go ahead and remove the chimney at this point. We'll set it down right here. And we're going to open the teapot. I've already put the tea in the teapot, just loose tea here. We're going to fill the teapot up from the tap on the samovar with this boiling water. I'm really curious to see how much of the smoky flavor from the wood fire was imparted into the water to flavor the tea. So we're going to fill this all the way up. Most of the way up. Go ahead and close that tap. I'm going to put the lid back on the teapot. And we're actually going to set the teapot
Now, actually, let's check these coals. I'm going to add just a couple more coals. That's going to keep that water in the water reservoir hot, so that when we pour the tea, we'll have nice hot water coming out of that tap. Then we're going to set the teapot on top of the samovar here, where the chimney was before. Now, that's going to keep the teapot and the tea inside the pot hot while we're waiting for that tea to steep. And it's also, it's blocking off that chimney, so I suspect it's really going to slow down the fire in the fire chamber too. So that's probably just going to smolder while that teapot's on top. Looks like the water chamber is still steaming, so that's good. And we still have a little bit of smoke escaping from around the teapot, so I'm assuming that's good. We'll let this sit for a few minutes to steep, and then we'll try it out. All right, let's try our tea. So here's one of the other unique things about the samovar is we make the tea in a relatively small teapot, but we make it very, very strong. So the idea now is that we're going to pour a small amount of tea from the teapot into our teacup here. So go ahead and do that. And yes, it is indeed very, very dark, so that worked. And then we top it off to kind of the desired strength with this hot water from the tap on the samovar. Go ahead and do that. There we go. And it's very hot, but let's give it a try. Wow, that actually does have, even with the pine wood that we used for the fire, that actually has a really nice smoky flavor to it. All right, well, I'm going to sit here and enjoy my tea for now, and I'll meet back up with you in the studio.
All right, so that actually went really well, I feel, for my first time using a samovar personally. Now, let's talk about some of the, I don't know, advantages, lessons learned, things that went well, things I might do differently with the samovar. So some of the advantages for me personally, I like stuff that has a smoky flavor. And I was actually really surprised how much of the flavor of the smoke was actually imparted into the tea via the water that absorbed some of that smoky flavor from the fire inside the samovar. So that was kind of cool. Now we used pine, which traditionally is one of the woods that would be used. Apparently alder is another commonly used wood for the samovar. And usually pine is not a wood that you think of as producing a smoke that you would want to use as a flavor. But this was actually really good. It tasted it not overpowering. It had just a very pleasant, kind of mild campfire flavor. Now, apparently, one of the other things that you should traditionally use in the samovar is pine cones. I didn't have any pine cones, so we couldn't do that. But I imagine the pine cones would maybe give it even a little more of that real, like, piney smoke, campfire kind of flavor. Now, we may play around with this. I have some mesquite, I have some hickory, I have some cherry, and some apple wood that I think would all be awesome to use in the samovar to impart some of those other smoky flavors. So we may try some of those out in the future. Now, building the separate little fire that I could pull coals off of to drop into the samovar, I feel like it was a really good idea instead of putting fresh unburned wood directly into the samovar. So picking up those fully charred sticks and dropping those in and having the other fire going gave me a constant supply of those. Maybe it took more wood, but we're talking about a tiny, tiny amount of wood, really. So yeah, if you're going to do this, I would recommend having that separate fire going of those little sticks to drop in. I was also surprised, actually, how two things. First of all, how quickly the water heated up. I was expecting it to take longer with just those coals, those hot coals inside the fire chamber, but it actually didn't take that long. And once it was heated up, keeping just a tiny, tiny fire going in that fire chamber, just a few hot coals, actually kept that water chamber hot all day. So yeah, that was kind of cool, which kind of lends itself to the idea of this being a good way to sit down with another person or a group of people to tea for a while. If you're planning on not just, you know, sitting down, having a quick cup of tea and then leaving, if you're going to sit down for a few hours, maybe this could be a great way to do it. Which reminds me, one of the things about a samovar in Russian culture is that the samovar itself is sometimes used as an arbitrator between people, whether that's neighbors or family who are not getting along or not talking, and the idea being that they can sit down to tea with the samovar on the table, and they can, instead of having to talk to each other about their differences to get things worked out, they can just talk to the samovar. So I came across kind of a fun narrative that's actually much longer, but I'm just going to read the beginning of it, about two men, two neighbors who have known each other for a very long time, who are not seeing eye to eye, and they sit down to tea with a samovar. It goes something like this. Samovar, tell my neighbor Ivan that I am angry with him. Samovar, tell my neighbor Sergei that I know he's angry about this. I'm very sorry, but I don't know how I can fix it. Samovar, tell my neighbor Ivan that he should know how to fix a fence. Samovar, what fence? Samovar, ask my neighbor Sergei what fence he's talking about. Samovar, tell my neighbor Ivan that I'm talking about the fence his cattle broke. Samovar, tell my neighbor Sergei that I did not know my cattle had broken the fence, but I will fix it now that I know. Samovar, tell my neighbor Ivan that his cattle broke the fence, the chickens got loose, and were killed by the village dogs. Samovar, tell my friend Sergei that my wife is angry with me because we've had no eggs and I did not know it was because of my cattle. I will fix the fence and replace his chickens. Samovar, tell my friend Ivan he's a good man, and I thought he was avoiding me because he did not want to fix the fence. Samovar, ask my neighbor Ivan why he thought I was angry if it was not about the fence. Samovar, tell my neighbor Sergei I thought it was about his daughter. Samovar, what daughter? Samovar, ask my neighbor Ivan why I would be angry about my daughter. Samovar, did you ask him? Samovar, tell my friend Sergei, his daughter and my son have known each other since they were children for a very long time. And I'm sure you can see where this narrative is going. It goes on for a long time. These two men work out their differences, and it's very entertaining throughout. So, I hope you've maybe learned something today about the samovar. Maybe you've seen one before and always wondered what it's for. Maybe it seems magical and mysterious, and you're not sure, like, how does that make tea? Isn't it easier just to boil some water and put the tea in it? Maybe now you understand a little more of the function. Excuse me. The function of the samovar and why it might be a really good idea in certain circumstances. Beyond that, if you're traveling to another country where samovars are often used, I would encourage you to seek out a place that has one and try out the samovar tea. Or maybe you have a neighbor who has one, and that'll give you the opportunity to try some samovar tea, because it is just really good. I can't even describe how I took just regular plain black tea, made the tea in the samovar, and the smoky sweet flavor that it ended up with was not drastically different, but noticeably different and very, very pleasant and enjoyable. Now, on top of that, the other thing that I want to challenge you to do is in certain things in life, just take the time to enjoy the process, because there's always a more efficient way to do something, especially in our modern day and age. In fact, you can even buy an electric samovar that you set on the kitchen counter and plug in. And in my mind, that's just not the same. So go ahead, don't be afraid to take the time to enjoy the process of certain things, whether that's making tea in a samovar, maybe making your own sourdough bread with a recipe that takes 4 or 5 days. Maybe it's brewing beer at home instead of just buying it from the store. Nothing against buying it from the store, but some things there's a process to. Maybe it's making your own cheese, like we've talked about on multiple episodes of the podcast here. Maybe it's some sort of pickled or fermented food that you could buy at the store already fermented or pickled or whatever, already canned. And maybe it takes you several months of a process to make that same food. Maybe it's some sort of cured meat that's going to take some time to make. And what I would encourage you to do is, in some of those activities, don't be intimidated by the length of the process, but just embrace that and enjoy the process. So that's about all we have for this week on the actual project. As always, if you want to see what I'm doing now, follow me on Instagram. I am at isaac.r.gordon. That's isaac.r.gordon. If you're on Facebook and interested in participating with the rest of the Master of None podcast community, you can join the Master of None podcast Facebook group. It's a place where we can all kind of share our current projects, maybe get some ideas, some inspiration, some advice on those projects. What else? If you have any questions, suggestions for future episodes, anything like that, you can send me an email, contact@masterofnonepodcast.com. You can also always get to that through the Master of None podcast website, which is just masterofnonepodcast.com. Go to the contact page, you can send me an email there. That way you don't actually have to remember the email address. So, that's all I have for this week. Until next week, pursue your mastercraft. Bye. Theme music for the Master of None podcast is Club Seamus by Kevin MacLeod. Incompetech.com. Licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0. creativecommons.org. If you need some of your own original music, go check out Kevin's other work at his website, incompetech.com.